This particular session is called Hartley Recommended, Cultural Exchange Through Mass Media. Of course, not the session is Hartley Recommended. I'd rather don't dare to do that. Hartley Recommended is, of course, the cultural exchange as a possibility or activity. Therefore, when we see and learn about other cultures, other nations, other groups, it might help us to understand and to accept them. What for me is always very important, that it makes it harder for us and to fight or to hate other people. So in a way, I think mass media can be used, not just in a bad manner, in a bad way, but also as a mean of making peace and helping countries working together. As a matter of fact, the German-French relationship is a very good example for that. Therefore, as you might know, England and France have been enemies for centuries, up to the First World War. And then the Germans became the big enemies of the French people, and that didn't become better after the Second World War, of course, or due to the Second World War. So politicians, after the Second World War, started to build up some kind of youth exchange. They worked out the system of twin towns and all these kind of things. And it ended up nowadays that France and Germany are those who really push somehow always all activities for the European community. So it shows that there are means and ways to make enemies being friends, and the mass media have been involved in that, as well as, of course, teaching the language in schools on both sides. Hartley Recommended is, of course, on purpose bad English, because it's no English, it's German. We would say, if we recommend something, we recommend that very heartily. You, of course, would highly recommend things, and I wonder why, you know, to look up for something if you recommend it. You might wonder why bake something before recommend it. So, however, the expressions we use in our language are part, of course, of our culture. I was always wondering, how can it be raining like cats and dogs? I mean, if you translate that into German, people would say, are you nuts or something? And how about being nuts? I mean, has everybody of you experienced to feel or to look like a nut? That can't be the same, and you just can't translate these kind of things. And just when I mentioned weather, did you ever measure the weight of heavy weather? So, you know, all these kinds of words we use and expressions we use are part of our culture. And this is, of course, one of the first problems we have to deal now that we understand each other. What are the definitions of culture and of mass communication, mass media? So culture is, of course, not just high culture, not just the arts, theater, or science, or whatever comes into your mind, you know, like drawings and graphics and all these things. It don't necessarily have to be only the low culture, whatever it might be. It involves, of course, also popular culture, all kinds of printed material, comics and strips and cartoons and movies and all ways of express your feelings in music or whatever means you might choose. And you might do, like dancing on the street and enjoying yourself. So the language, as I already have shown, is also a very important part of your culture. And therefore, you have to translate the language, the words you carry with your language into another language. You lose always a part of the culture when you want to transfer it to somebody else, if you want to exchange it with somebody else. And therefore, we get almost already somehow in the problem what we are going to talk about. Just let me mention in the end before that you understand what I mean when I talk about culture. In an ethnographic sense of the word, it involves somehow everything from drinking habits to recipes to your way of celebrations, or how you deal with religion and cults and so on. I would rather like to say that somehow all kinds of forms of life and expressions of daily life of a group of people, what can be a minority in some country, it can be the whole nation, it can be a group of people who have the same language in common or the same traditions in common, as we just see in the Soviet Union, what is seemed to break apart because there have been so many different traditions what obviously didn't work together. As long they have been forced together, they had to work together, but now when they have the choice, they more likely decide to somehow put more emphasis on their independence and on their very own group. So all kinds of life forms or expressions of daily life of a group of people, what they have in common, of course, I would like to define as culture now, in the sense I'm using it. So when I refer to peace is gained when we learn to know and accept each other, that means we don't have just to know the high art or the low music or whatever, if it's popular music. It involves everything, the whole way of living. All right, so what are medias and what are specific mass medias? What comes up into your mind when you think about that word first?
TV.
Television, of course, right? And
newspapers.
Radio. Magazines, yeah. So what did you say?
Movies,
yes. So all kind of material, what is spread to a huge variety of people. How about telephones? Is that a mass media?
No, sure.
Well, it's a discussion about it, because you reach only one person usually with a telephone. So you can't spread your information to many people at the same time. So mass communication means that the same information is somehow delivered to many people, to a mass of people at the same time. It does not mean that a mass of people is able to use this this device of communication.
So like if you have a phone tree where you call a friend and they call four people and they call four people to invite everybody to come to the town meeting, that would be mass communication.
Well, I wouldn't call that, because it's always that you call to one person at the time, or let's say four people, and four people is not a mass, you know. I mean, it's very open, of course, what is a mass, but I wouldn't say this place is not filled with a mass of people. This is a group, a small group of people who are sitting here.
But if you use we have in our state educational television, which there's a here listening station in every area called a county in our state, and any number of people can pay and then go to a center, and they're all listening to the same thing, and they can all talk back.
You're talking about television or telephone?
Telephone. There are receivers, and then you can talk back by pressing down something on a microphone, and there could be like 25 people in a room someplace in the state of Wisconsin listening to someone in Madison, and 30 people someplace else.
I don't know
if that's mass or not, but it's quite a lot of people.
Yeah, that would work. You know, it's always very much related to, I mean, radio don't necessarily has to be a mass communication device when, let's say, it's somewhere in the Andes, in the mountains, where, let's say, not more than five people are able to receive that program. On the other hand, if you build up this kind of system, then it works somehow as a mass communication system. So, as a matter of fact, the important thing, because that what you just described has something in common with movie theaters, because the movie will be seen by maybe millions of people, but not at the same time like at the television or theater. You know, they see it once after another. Theater does perform always a little different. It's not exactly the same information, so it has to be exactly the same information like newspaper. There are not 20 or 50 or 100 people sitting together to read one newspaper. There are, of course, lots of copies of the same newspaper what are spread all over. So what we have actually is some kind of dispersed audience. what uses these kind of facilities. So of course, when you organize telephone like that, then we would regard it as a device of mass communication, but not when a big mass has access to a special device of communication. That not necessarily means it is a tool of mass communication. All right, so you have done a good job already in mentioning all those four important kinds of mass media. Now my question would be, how can culture be represented by or mediated by mass media? Or how can this represented culture be then exchanged?
Good programs.
Good programs. Okay, so you involve already the question of quality.
And I think many of us have visited lands, via the television that we might never have a chance really to go to. So we learn cultures in areas.
In Seattle, it's called a cavalcade, which presents every week for the winter season, pretty much from September into March, different countries, and people just flock to it. It's in the Opera House, and it's always pretty much sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a travelogue type thing.
Yeah.
But it includes certainly the culture, because not just the pictures of cities and mountains, it talks about its people and what they do. So I think that's one way.
Yeah. So, but is that, would you regard that as a mass communication way?
No, but you would certainly get information from other countries if you're willing to go.
It's a cultural exchange.
It's a cultural exchange. That's
right.
That's
perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another form of cultural exchange there would be a conversation I had 5 years ago, someone telling me about East Germany, that the East is dead because they've been watching West German television for too long. So at that point, several years ago, they were saying it's already just a matter of time, because the expectations developed by commercials on West German television and by presentations of the West German or Western European lifestyle had changed people's perceptions in the East and created certain expectations about what they wanted out of life.
Mm-hmm. That's
Another thing might be, they tell me in some countries, they watched a lot of American Western movies. And so they would kind of expect Americans to be like cowboys.
Yeah. Like what? Like
cowboys.
Like cowboys. Okay.
You remember when J.R. Ewing was shot in Dallas? 55% of the entire population of England and of Egypt watched it.
That's right. It was even broadcast in the BBC News. Who shot JR?
I think we have to be careful. I mean, she's talking about a very fine kind of program. We are introduced to a lot of culture that maybe we don't want to know. I, a couple of years ago, I thought, and I don't really look at those programs, but I found out about more things that I don't care to know about by casually looking at some programs on television about the whole world of the drug dealer and the pimp and all sorts of things that I'm not personally acquainted with. And I certainly found out more than I cared to know. I have a habit of falling asleep, and when I wake up, there is something I never intended to look at. And several times I thought, my goodness, what is this? And so I was introduced to a culture I had absolutely no interest in learning to know anything about it.
Well, maybe we still have to know what goes on in our own culture. So
up to a point.
Yeah, but we have to have a balanced view of it, so we know what to do about some of it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, what you're saying about this TV or whatever it is, mass communication, that it's not always under our control totally. Mm-hmm. We can walk into a room and see, you know, something from another country or another place and not really have a lot of control over it. Something I've had a little more, maybe. I had some experience as another means of mass communication and sharing of cultures and stuff. I've been, I listened to a lot of recordings of music and stuff, and last night I did a song in the lift about a guy from Chile, a musician, and I listened to, since I traveled to Mexico, a lot of Latin American records, and trying to find them up here is very difficult, but managing to find recordings of these people from various countries in South America and Mexico and stuff is really interesting. Similarly, I was just reading, and this kind of relates to what you were saying about East Germany, I just read a book about young rock and roll musicians in the Soviet Union who had listened to the Beatles and listened to all these Western musicians and gotten really interested and tried to play, and they weren't really allowed to, but they persevered, I guess. And then they started playing, and they were singing all these Western songs in English and in French and in Italian and stuff. And then finally a couple of groups got together and started singing in Estonian and started singing in Russian. And it was a major step towards, like, different from what you were saying, where they were watching West German TV, where they were sort of, they were using their own culture and their own language in that case, and it was significant. And then what they were doing is they were passing around cassette tapes because they couldn't get on the official state record company, so cassette tapes was how this music was spread out within the Soviet Union, all over the place, way over in East Asia and stuff.
All the examples you just mentioned tell very much that cultural exchange can be also used to find out about your own culture, to find, you know, to identify yourself with things what you feel are different from that what you have seen. And therefore, I try to define culture, as I said before, not just as a matter of nations, but also as you already mentioned it, that culture somehow is what a group of people has in common. So, like, let's say drug dealers, they have their own social act, it's called, you know, their own way to talk to each other. What might be not very familiar to you and might sound as strange as to a German might sound, you know, it's I'm blue, you know, something like that. In Germany, if you are blue, you're not sad, but you're drunken. So even the same mean of expression, like using colors, can have a different meaning. And that's called social act. So if it's very much related to a smaller group and not just a language at all.
One of the unfortunate things I think is that we are exporting mass media around the world that really is not the best that America can offer. When you watch the best of the BBC on educational channel, we are seeing perhaps the best that England could produce. But, you know, to export Roseanne Barr and other wonderful products of, you know, the America's lowest common denominator approach to TV, I think is a disservice.
Yeah, but that's the negative side of freedom and being a free country and having no censorship.
Well, but I tried to put an emphasis that this is just part of your culture. I mean, these programs are seen by Americans as well, and they are more spread than other programs, you know. I mean, very often it is so that you see here in the U.S. only a very few German movies, and they are those movies who are very arty, you know, very, very high standard. But in a way, they somehow spoil your impression of the German culture, because we are not all that smart as in these few movies you get to see here. I mean, there are people from all different backgrounds and so on. And so in a way, somehow it even might tell more about your culture to spread these kind of films, because they tell very much about the wishes you have, the dreams, the expectations of life, even though they might, you know, look like low culture and not of high intellectual sense or whatever.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. I mean, there was a survey made, for example, that in all those American movies what were shown in other countries, the hero of the films was in about 80% of the movies was white, was male, was between 35 and 45. You know, of course, this is getting somehow to become a stereotype that all Americans would be like that, you know, that well, the women, and all the women don't do their jobs, you know, and feel self-confidence? Does it always has to be a man who's doing the job, who's having the adventure, who's finding the solutions and so on? And that's, you know, the other side. So on the one hand side, it means very much who got the power to spread his information or her information to other countries or inside the own country, and what interests are behind all that. But it also involves, you know, the dreams and wishes of the audience, because if nobody would see those films, they would of course change their concepts. And so it does tell between the lines a lot about the cultures as well. And we get already a little further in my projected following, and I like that very much. It's a very good thing. Let's just before we talk more about the quality of the programs, what can be exchanged, more about the structure of these four different media devices. What you have mentioned, the first was printed material like books and magazines, newspapers. The second, as I understood, was radio, all kind of broadcasting, and the third, let's put the others together, video and movies and television as audiovisual devices. So to divide them in three different groups. So okay, what's going on with newspapers now and with books? They use news agencies, and news agencies somehow define what is new. So they somehow influence very much our all image of the country it is, or the group, the minority or the majority it refers to, because somebody else is selecting, maybe somebody from out there, like AP and former UPI have been one of the few world agencies. We have quite a lot of international news agencies, and of course very many national news agencies, but as far as the power of these world agencies works, they are of course always people who somehow have their own concept of what is important and what they think might be of interest for people in other countries to know about this country. So it already changes and influences the image of a country or of a group. And, you know, however, I mean, also, how do you define something what is news? I mean, if there is, like in Yugoslavia, still riots carrying on, is that no news anymore because they keep going all the time like that? I mean, you know, all these questions somehow involve already printed material. But when we come to the question of intercultural exchange, we find out that we have actually in printed material two tools. One is, of course, a printed word, what can be, of course, translated. But as I have tried to point out already with these expressions at the beginning, it just means also that you somehow change things. You have to find a different expression to match somehow the idea of the original. And it also, you know, transfers or adapts ideas and backgrounds. One of my favorite examples is that Eskimos have 20 different words to express different kinds of snow qualities. I mean, for us it's not so important because we don't have to deal so much with snow, but how would you translate that? How would you make people in let's say, India or South Africa feel the importance of having 20 different words, and how would you translate them, you know? So this is already a loss in culture when you have to translate and transfer. The other mean we have in printed material are, of course, pictures, you know, photographs or whatever, and they of course influence also your image. Let's say Peru. What have you in your mind when you think about Peru?
Mountains,
the Andes, and what?
Llamas.
Yeah. So very specific, however ecological or environmental backgrounds, and maybe also all these riots, the problems with
cholera epidemic,
terrorists, and now, yeah, in the last time, cholera. So somehow your image is very much narrowed by these images you can get, because the informations are already somehow adapted to what's of your interest. You know, you don't get the same news like Peruvian people, because for them it's of course more interesting who is involved in it, who is responsible that they didn't help with the cholera, and what do they have to do to the hospitals. For you it might be only interesting when you see the picture, you see, oh, there are people starving, they have a bad time, you know, and all these things, and it just matches in the images you have had before. The same as Colombia, you know, you probably, everybody would think first of drugs when he or she thinks about Colombia, and so further on. So these images, of course, influence very much our image of this nation or group of people or so. What else do we have?
I think what you're saying, significantly, that like somebody always decides in printed matter. There's always an editor somewhere who says, print this, don't print that. This is a good picture, this isn't a good picture. This is a picture of two soldiers shooting somebody. This is a picture taken a half second later of two soldiers standing around, where the photograph or what gets printed is that much, and they choose that, and somebody has to choose that, and printed matter is always edited, it's always biased as much as anything else.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it seems to be so complicated when we have different languages. But how about if we stick to the language? Agatha Christie once wrote this nice, interesting novel, what was called 10 Little Negroes. I don't know if anybody of you knows it with this title, because in the US it was spread with the title to 10 Little Indians. I mean, the reasons are very obvious. You know, the publishers didn't want to have, you know, some kind of quarrel with people, you know, that saying, how can you use the word Negro? How can you, you know, keep building up these kind of images of certain people in our country and make them, you know, yeah, display them as kind of games or tools inside this thing. But then you have this movie made after this story, what is called 10 Little Indians, and there's a little song in it, 10 Little Indians. And this is, of course, also distributed to England. In England, of course, it gets the original title, because people will see, you know, they don't know anything about 10 Little Indians, but of course they know the novel 10 Little Negroes. So they go to see this film, and ended up that in this film they have all of a sudden this song about 10 Little Indians. And they just get confused, you know, what are these 10 Little Indians for? Because they don't know the background. So you have, even between these, in between the same language, you have the problem of if you want to exchange part of your popular culture in this specific case, you have to take care how you spread it in order not to offend people. And, you know, like in England, nobody would be offended, obviously, especially not in that time when Agatha Christie was writing this novel. But later on, when it was printed here in the US, it was some kind of a problem to use the same title.
I was aware of, coming on the bus, we were singing together, and we were singing way down up on the Swanee River, and all of a sudden we come to the old darkies on my heart, you know, how that goes. Wasn't darkies, it old people, what was the word in there, do you remember that? Oh, darkies on my heart, you know, whatever it is. And I thought, oh dear, couldn't even leave the word darkies in there, they had to go, oh, people. And a little black sample, another little book, do you remember a little black sample? I'm not supposed to use that anymore either, because
yeah,
well, it's a cute little story. And I don't know why anybody should be offended. It could be a little black sweet or something. Or a little dumb sweet or a little dumb Norwegian or something. A little black sample.
Okay, let's go over to broadcasting and radio, because as a matter of fact, to be brief or frank, I'd put most emphasis on audiovisual material, so we can use some examples and discuss those later on, and time is passing by. Well, in the radio, of course, we have just two different means of transporting contents. What would be, on one hand, of course, voices, you know, spoken words. You have the same situation like in the newspaper, you can translate them, but then of course somebody else will speak them. He will have a different way of using his ability in speech. So as you might know, if you learn a different language, you have always problems with some of the sounds because they are not familiar to your language. So translating means also, when you look on the phonetics, that it will change the quality of the sound. Like French is regarded to be a very beautiful language. Danish is regarded to be spoken as if you would have a hot potato in your throat. So, I mean, everybody little images what I use, but it also changed the quality of sound when we talk about radio. The other material what we have is, of course, the music, what usually don't has to be translated, but there is, of course, some problems involved because music became more and more international. They are very much related to fashions, and they are very much mixed very often. You know, sometimes it's very hard to tell where a song comes from, because even in Sweden, Germany, and Spain, they use sometimes the English language to write their poems for their songs. In order to, of course, it's a question of market and capitalism background, how to spread songs. But however, just to put an emphasis on this, if you hear Latin sound, it don't really has to be music made in Brazil or wherever. And so it somehow mixes cultures so much that you can't always use and regard music, even though it comes from a certain country, as a real mean to express the identity, the national identity, or the people's identity. On the other hand, of course, it is part of their culture, as American movies, as you already mentioned, and American TV programs are part of all the world's culture already, being spread all over programs, you know. And Brazilian TV telenovelas are shown in China, and people have a high demand for that and a high interest in that. So somehow worrying about the slave Isaura, what is the title of one of these telenovelas, became also part of, you know, of the ideas and the thoughts of Chinese people, as of Polish people and Russian people and Italian people. So mass media give this mean of international and intercultural exchange, but they somehow, as the example of the music tells, make you know, cultures already being mixed up somehow. So if you want, so we have an international melting pot by the mass medias nowadays. All right, let's go to the audiovisual material, television, video, and movie theaters actually. They are actually only tools to display or to transport films or programs, of course. They're just, as we said, telephone can be used as a single communication system or as mass communication systems. It's not actually now movie theaters what we are talking about, or television, either it use cable or broadcasting, you know, via air, or satellite or whatever means. That's not what we are talking about. We are talking actually about programs, about films. And therefore films somehow contain structures. They have their contents and their forms, what they can communicate with. In a way, they are audiovisual tools. And the question is, when we exchange them, how do we exchange them? Is it that, let's say, we come from the US and travel to, let's say, Japan, and shoot a video or a movie and take that back home? It will be, of course, a different image or give a different image to those people who see that video than if the Japanese television company provides a film that was actually made for their own audience and was bought and you know, from some American broadcasting company and spread here. So we do, actually we have the difference between so-called auto stereotypes, pictures what you make yourself about yourself, or hetero stereotypes, so pictures what you somehow make about somebody else and spread maybe to your own people. So these two ways we have, and they will give, of course, different images, even though sometimes, as I said that for the music, they interfere each other. So if people keep continuously talking to me that Germans are, let's say, always in the perfect time at their places, it might somehow influences me, like trying to do that. You know, it also might, you know, enforces me to show I'm not, you know, like those, and you're wrong with your prejudice or whatever, and being late on purpose. However, it does influence my behavior, and that's the same with these images what we have from cultures. So especially when we talk about tourism, when people, let's say, in Argentina find out that people in other countries are very much interested in gauchos, then of course they will enforce their own image of gauchos in order to invite more people to come and give them this impression. As you mentioned it for the cowboys, you know, what somehow some image what is obviously very highly regarded and meets a high interest in other countries.
Well, isn't there an author in Germany that writes cowboy stories?
Oh, of course, Karl May, yes. And so we have quite a lot of them. I already prepared a sample of a film what I was going to ask you where it comes from, and it looks very American, therefore it involves Clint Eastwood, but it is actually also a German-Spanish-Italian co-production. Most of the actors are German, Italian, and Spanish, and they speak also in those languages, but you wouldn't see it because it's dubbed. And so if you don't look carefully for the mouth, you know, the movements of the mouth, you might think, all right, this is an American movie, this is shot somewhere in the Sierra Nevada or in the Grand Canyon or wherever, and it's just part of our culture. So that would be a very good example for a hetero stereotype. Because that's what others think about how life would be in the West, you know, they might put different emphasis on it. But that already means that in the structure and the forms, when we compare American-made Westerns and European-made Westerns, we can learn somehow about the different aspects, the different things what they put their emphasis on and their main interests on. So as a matter of fact, those samples are very good if you study and analyze carefully the structures and the forms to learn more about the culture, your own culture and the other culture. And so this is actually a very important point to use these things. Audiovision, what is it? It's sight and sound, you see and you hear. Now, my question would be, do we really understand what we see? Do we really understand what we hear? Let's say it's an American movie or an American TV program. Would you say you just understand everything? Or would there be possibilities that you might misunderstand things?
Well, I think her example is perfect of turning on and seeing a different culture within the United States. You know, I could turn on something about a different part of Tacoma where they speak mostly Spanish. And I would understand a little bit because I've studied a little bit of Spanish, but not most. Or they had this Stories of English thing on TV where they had subtitles for all the different varieties of English language in the United States. And they go to Appalachia and these people are speaking, you know, Edwardian English or something like this, and I can't understand it at all. So there's no guarantee.
I came from Ohio, Minnesota, and they have on TV, they have all these grain quotes and things. It's like a foreign language. Yeah, in Ohio you don't see these things on the news.
to me there's a great problem in getting the right understandings across when we are dealing both with the instant news. For instance, on a program, you see what is supposedly happening in maybe Israel today, and you get just that for today, and then you get something like Tom Friedman's From Beirut to Jerusalem, where you have a considered study of what is happening in a place over a 10-year period. One may give a much, much more dependable picture of what is actually happening than what is the instant news of the instant portrayal of that day.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very good example, because we have now, if we don't regard, I mean, when we talk to each other, you might not understand me because I'm talking too soft, because you just don't hear me, or I might, you know, there might be also the problem that my pronunciation is so different from that what you expect me to how to pronounce English that you wouldn't understand. So we call that, in terms of communication, we call that noise. It's any kind of things what interfere that the communication can't work at all. You know, that would be if the TV set is broken, or if it makes, you know, also noises, or the VC recorder has some problems, so always some things are walking over the screen and all these kind of things. So that would be, of course, one thing that makes it difficult, more difficult, or maybe even impossible for us to understand. But then you mentioned those other three possibilities, what are more related to the perception of the informations you get, the perception of that, what you see and what you hear. And we have that both in sight and sound. It's one is, of course, the language. So as you mentioned it, if the language is different, if they talk a different idiom or even a different dialect or accent or whatever, you might have trouble to understand as long as you don't know this specific dialect or language. In terms of what you see, it might be like my father would have trouble to understand all these flashbacks in a movie, because he would get confused. He has learned to see movies when the narration is, you know, somehow linear, when what you see after another has to be happened after another. It can't be that you see something later what has happened before. So if you don't know this kind of, we call that film language, it's a part of the grammar of the film, if you don't know that, you might also be having trouble to understand. So this would be the part of the language. Another part which is pretty related to that is the structure of narration. So if you know the grammar of a language, and if you know how to narrate, let's say, a joke, then you can understand it well. If you would, you know, tell first somehow the effect, the point, and then somehow, you know, make story around or so, or as we learned last night, if somebody is telling a joke, you have to repeat maybe a part in order to make the audience familiar to a special pattern, and then at the very end you change the pattern, and that's actually the joke, you know. So we have in our minds already a structure how to narrate things. And that's, of course, the same with movies, as I somehow pointed out with this example of flashbacks and all these kinds of things. And the third one is, of course, what we mainly were talking about yet, the culture. So if we see things, what they do, you know, then it's very much related to their customs, to their habits, you know, to their way of living. You might wonder that, let's say, in Japan, there is somebody who pushes people into the trains or into the buses, because their culture involves that, you know, they would try to get as many people as possible in. And maybe some other countries would say, if all the seats are taken, sorry, you got to wait for the next bus. So you might wonder about that and might misunderstand that. You might think he's very rude. As a matter of fact, he helps them, but it seems to us that he is very rude. So this is just one example about misunderstanding of culture, what you see. And the same, of course, can happen also with the language. I just want you to recall my examples from the beginning of these expressions. You know, of course, if you would say to somebody, it's raining cats and dogs, and he would look up and, I can't see any dogs up there. You know, that would be this kind of misunderstanding as well. So audiovisual perception involves actually knowledge. And it also can provide knowledge. So if you learn to know that people in Japan might be pushed into the train, then you learn that, and next time you see a movie when, let's say, it's just shown somewhere in the background, you wouldn't wonder anymore because you know, well, this is just, you know, the way they get people onto their rides, you know. So this is actually very, very important to know that we have, when we perceive videos or news or whatever, if it's printed material or audio tapes or audiovisual material, we have parts in our brain what are always involved and use these knowledge to understand the narration, the language, and also, you know, what's going on, the culture, the background. And so that's what your example actually was about Israel. If you have this background of this overview about 10 years, then of course you will understand that news clip beforehand much better in a much brighter light than if you don't have this background. So of course it is useful always to give these kinds of informations in order to help people to understand what's actually going on and what does the situation really means to the people there. Regarded to the time, I will try to straighten my preparations up a little now. The question now is how to transfer. I mean, we have learned now what means we have, especially in the mass communication, we have learned what actually we need if we want to use these tools, but now what does people who provide us these informations, these possibilities of cultural exchange, what do they have to do in order to transfer these informations, to make them understandable for us, to help to make sure that there will be no misunderstanding? And so the question is it pure translation what you might use? Translation both in pictures, what is in movies, of course, hardly used. It might be censorship, but if a culture doesn't like to have displayed a certain visual effects, then they might censor it and take it away. Other nations would be eager and say, this is part of our culture, we are liberal to this specific thing, but we don't like that. So they might censor something else. So just to give an example that it works also with the pictures, but of course it works basically with the words, with the sounds and so on. So my question is, would that be enough, just a pure translation? And as far as we already came now, it seems like that wouldn't work. Again, referred to these expressions in the beginning. So
really do a that's pure translation.
Right. Yeah. So in a way, it must be more than translation. That means some kind of adaptation. And the question is always, if you start to do these things, and I've been doing this for years, I have been somehow working as an author to write the German dialogues for American TV serials and TV series, like Little House on the Prairie or Family Ties or so. You get, of course, learn to know a lot of problems, what you have to deal with if you have to adapt things. Because let's just give an example. I mean, when they talk about in Family Ties, they talk about who's betting for the 49ers. I mean, how you want to translate that? Because people in West Germany, for example, they don't even have a clue what is American football all about. They don't even have a clue what it means 49ers. They wouldn't have get an idea that this might be a team or something like that, you know. And all these things. And if you just translate it and say the 49ers in German, they have no chance to understand what they're actually doing when they bet, you know, on those teams. And if you would translate it into, let's say, that you would give it a name of a soccer team, of a German soccer team, you wouldn't do any good to it as well. Because then people would think, well, do they play also in the US? Or how does, you know, all these kind of things come up. A very important problem actually is the you. in the English language. Because as you might know, in some other Europe, especially European languages, you have a polite form to talk to each other and a more less official form. And so we have always to decide if a person talking to another one is using the polite form or the non-official form. And there have been, it tells a lot about our culture now when I tell how they worked this out in the 50s and 60s. They said as soon as a couple kisses each other, they start to say the non-informal way, you know, to use this you in a very personal way. But as long as they don't, they will always use the polite form. Nowadays, of course, our habits in Germany have changed, and men don't kiss so much. So sometimes they might, but you know, be very close friends and you know, buddies or whatever. And so it might be appropriate then in French or in Danish to use the non-official form, the not so polite form. Just to give two examples, what means adaption now in practical terms of words. All right, so we learned now somehow, if you agree with me that this is more than pure translation, that you have to think a lot about whether you want to bring the product, the film, whatever, to another culture, if you bring it to them and just display it somehow, or do you want somehow to get their culture to you, you know? The different approach means like using this again, this 49ers example. And the one possibility would say, well, American football is part of the American culture, so you can't erase that, you have to stick to that, and you will now use just instead of saying 49ers, they would say, on what football team do you bet, for what American football team would you bet now? So you don't have to use this 49ers, but it involves still part of U.S. American culture. If I would pull it somehow, you know, to myself, I would then use soccer instead and make it easier to be understood for the audience. But they would have, you know, have a bigger distance to your culture because they don't really get a clue what that could be in the original version. They probably won't even think about it. Audiovisual materials knows three ways to give somehow other cultures or other programs, to give programs to other cultures or other nations when you work on this language now, on the translations or so. And these are, of course, voice-over narrations. It can be also dialogues, but is very much used in Eastern European countries, like in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, because it doesn't cost so much and it's pretty easy to be done. You have just somebody who translated the scripts and they will just talk over, you know, using voice-over. So you still hear the original talking and you know who's talking and what kind of voice he or she has got and so on. But of course, it's quite disturbing because you got to concentrate a lot, and it is pretty strange to hear all the time somebody else talking in the background whom you can't understand. The second way would be to use subtitles. I suppose all of you have had the chance already to see films, maybe on PBS or wherever, what involves subtitles. And the third possibility would be what I already referred to, would be the mean of dubbing, what means that actors of the other country will speak and try to make their speech exactly related to the movements of the mouth and the length of the mouth being moved of the actors on the screen, what makes it very close. All these things have, as I try to list up here, a lot of advantages and disadvantages. The time doesn't allow me to put an emphasis on all of this, and I would have rather liked you to find out yourself by giving two samples. But I don't want you to miss a meat pizza tonight, so I will just if you give me some 3 more minutes, mention 2 or 3 important points, and then come to the conclusion, if that is all right with you. If you use subtitles, that would mean that you have to read a lot, that it destroys somehow the picture, the image, what is, of course, especially when you have artistic films, somehow composed. And some examples might even be that the white letters will be very bright in a dark scene, what plays in the night, you know, and will disturb entirely the emotions. However, because you got to read all the time, some might have no chance then to understand the film at all if they are not able to read, like children or people who haven't had the chance for that education. It also means that you have to rationalize the whole thing. You know, you can't really get into the emotions because you keep, you know, wandering with your eye up and down, up what's going to happen there, who is talking, okay, what is he saying, what is the translation. Sometimes even if you know a little from the language what is used in the film, you might start to compare, and after a while your job will not be to understand the narration and then the story, but to be angry about those people who did the translation, because they have to abbreviate, of course, otherwise you can't follow that quick the whole story, especially when they have quarrels and especially when many people are talking at the same time. If you do subtitles, you have to choose whom you will, you know, give the chance to display his dialogue on the screen in printed letters, and all the others will be pushed away. Usually the audience would have to make up their own mind whom they want to listen to, and that's what they haven't got. But the main point, however, is on one hand, it influences the original, of course, very strongly in the composition of the picture. It also doesn't allow to display accents and dialects. I have an example when they use different languages. In the subtitle, it's always English. So how would you know that for the people of the country where the film was made, some of the lines are foreign and some of the lines are familiar to them? You know, all these things you just can't display. And the same with songs or with quotes. When you use quotes, they show that by quote unquote signs on the screen. But if somebody says it, either as I said, you know something, you have knowledge, a background, then you know, oh, this is a Shakespeare quote, or you don't, then it is just something what he says. And you know, things are already so interpreted then by using this device. If you use dubbing, on the other hand, you get more sucked into the emotion because you don't have to read. You use both, you know, ear and eyes to perceive, and you will probably enjoy more the film as a whole. But of course, there's more information of the original culture getting lost, like the quality of the language, what we spoke about, the sounds, the phonetics, especially the quality of the work of the actors and actresses. I mean, you hear somebody else talking, and very often they overdo it because they can't act in the studio where they just speak, and so they put so much emphasis on their voices that they do more than they would have to do when they would be acting in it. So somehow it becomes more stereotyped. Somebody who's crying cries harder, somebody who's shouting shouts louder, and so on. However, it does change the cultural impression, and it does change the voices and all other things. As I said, also by rewriting these dialogues, it does change also some parts of the cultural background in order to make it understandable. The conclusion. It seems to be due to the process of the transfer that the exchange program is, as I just tried to point out with the example of subtitles and dubbing, are less elaborate and more stereotyped somehow due to that process, that technical process, and so they lose, you know, some of the quality of the original in any case. That also includes that any kinds of adaption, as we learned now, that there are more adaptions and translations, necessarily manipulates the material. And somehow, you know, you got to change it if you want people give them a chance to understand what's really going on, to follow the story and to make them enjoying the film or the program. So as a matter of fact, we can say that all cultural exchange is already some kind of interpretation of its material, and that it's displayed cultural, and it's also an interpretation of its displayed cultural background. And the last question would be, what can we do about it? I got some ideas written down here, and I will just briefly refer it. I would like you to try to get as much different sources and materials of any groups and nations and cultures you are interested in and you can get, and be then aware of all the stereotypes they use. Because, as I said, as more American films we see, as more we get the idea that all Americans are male between 35 and 45 and white, what is, of course, not the fact, and look like John Wayne or, yeah, however. Be also aware of the problems or disadvantages these medias or these tools, what we are talking about, do involve. I hope that now, after we have talking about, I've spoken about this, your perception, because of a different knowledge, might be different than before, and you might use now these ideas we tried to share.